In July, as part of the federally funded CARES Act Coronavirus Relief Fund, the Oregon State Legislature authorized $62 million for the Oregon CARES Fund to provide funding relief for Black Oregonians, Black-owned businesses, and Black community-led organizations financially impacted by the pandemic. This funding relief came after months of hard work of an 11-member group called the Council of Trust, made up of prominent Black and African-American Oregon leaders, activists, and elected officials. Applications opened to the public earlier this week. And so far, over 4,000 Black Oregonians, not including business owners or organizations, have applied for COVID-19 relief funding. The fund is overseen by the Council of Trust and managed by two local nonprofits, the Contingent and the Black United Fund. And when and if applicants are approved, funding must be dispersed by December 30th, 2020. Today, I spoke with three members of the Council of Trust, Representative Akasha Lawrence Spence, who represents most of West Portland, and it was only the second African-American to serve on the chamber in the state of Oregon, Sharon Gary Smith, a longtime local social justice philanthropist and the former director of the Mackenzie River Gathering Foundation, and Stephen Green, an economist who is the director of operations at Pencil Academy, a footwear design school in Portland, and who has worked for years to support Black-owned businesses in Portland. Here's more with my conversation with Representative Akasha Lawrence Spence, Sharon Gary Smith, and Stephen Green. So today we're here to speak about the COVID-19 Relief Fund for the Black community in Oregon. Can you give a little background on how you all became involved as members of the Council of Trust?
So thank you so much for that question. You know, as COVID-19 began to have its grip on our community, we were able to see pretty quickly that the pandemic was affecting the Black community at a disproportionate rate. And as we saw the current recession start to roll in, we saw also that the pandemic was hitting our community very specifically and disproportionately because of a lot of Black Oregonians are frontline workers, and a lot of Black Oregonians have a very specific level of asset and income poverty. And our Black businesses have been underinvested and have lack of access to capital that has been documented. And so what happened was, as we saw this pandemic really start to take shape, Black community members came together and said, well, what do we need to do to advocate for ourselves to ensure that when decisions are being made, when money is being allocated, that our communities are taken care of? And so we came together, and over the course of 6 weeks, we crafted the Oregon CARES Fund for Black Relief and Resiliency. And the fund, although we're talking specifically about the $62 million allocation, the fund was also an ask for disaggregated data and targeted universalism, which means that we look at the specificity and the specific needs of our communities and we address them. And we target them culturally and geographically to meet the needs of that community. And so what we did was we ended up crafting a really holistic fund that seeks to fortify the entire Black community ecosystem. So the fund is for Black people and families, for Black-owned businesses, and for Black-led community-based organizations, so that we really do the work of shoring us up in a time of unprecedented need.
That's great. Stephen, is there anything you would like to add to that?
I got nothing to add to that, no. Okay. She crushed that.
Okay.
I'm just good with spreadsheets.
Can you definitely? Can you talk about how you personally became involved?
So I think from the standpoint of how I got involved, for me to that question, I've been very active supporting Black and Latinx businesses in Oregon for years, and very quickly in March I saw Black and Latinx businesses being impacted by COVID. As part of those conversations, connected with Representative Lawrence Spence and others who were also talking about the impacts to other folks in the community, families, individuals, and nonprofits. And so, you know, I have a penchant for putting things into numbers and quantifying things. And so a little after the group got started, I got brought in to put some more data and quantification into what the impacts look like, as well as be able to speak to the emotional impact. I think there's been a definite quantifiable impact for businesses negatively, but even with businesses that have not seen a decrease in sales and in some cases an increase in sales, the emotional impact is still taking a big toll on the founders and their staffs.
Definitely. And Sharon, as a longtime social justice philanthropist in Portland, can you talk about how you became involved?
Well, I had heard about the work of Black leaders, Black community representatives, actually wrestling with a positive opportunity and response to the devastation that both Representative Spence and Stephen Green have spoken to. And based upon my history, I was asked to step into what I sit and listen to people really grappling at a very high level with what is possible and what can happen. And because my work has been about moving philanthropy around social justice and particularly racial justice for African-American, Black, and other people of color, I wanted to call the question about what resourcing, what delivery, what equity could be a part of a state response to a pandemic that I always say is the latest pandemic for Black Oregonians and Black Americans.
Thank you for each of you answering.
So I was honored to be able to participate just to see it unfolding.
So starting with Representative Lawrence Spence, can you talk about why these three areas are so critical in terms of supporting Black Oregonians, Black-owned businesses, and then also Black community-based organizations? Why it's so important that all three have an opportunity to have support during these times in the pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, when we look at the numbers, we know that the Black community has a higher rate of poverty and a higher rate of homelessness and houselessness in our community. And so when we see economic shocks that are vast and really deep and really trickle down in our economy to impact those who are low income and low wage workers the most, we have to do what we can to fortify them and to prevent them from, you know, further spiraling into deeper depths of destitution. And so part of what happens when you only fortify one part of the community, if you only gave cash assistance to this community, that's only a one-time payment, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to also show up the businesses that create the jobs, right? We're looking at the full scale of our Black community and our Black economy, right? So we have to look at the businesses that create the jobs, that generate capital in our communities, right? So we have to shore them up so that they're still there in 2021 and 2022 to provide jobs, to provide capital generation, to be a source of income for not only the community, but for themselves and their family. And then when we look at our nonprofits, they're the touch point. Their nonprofits are truly the connective tissue between our communities and our state and private entities. Like philanthropic dollars funnel through to our communities through these nonprofits and Black-led nonprofits more specifically. And they have a historic challenge with gaining the same amount of philanthropic dollars for the same or higher level of work than their white-led counterparts. And so if we only shore up one of these arms of our community, then we're doing ourselves a disservice. We have to really take a holistic approach to community wellness and community well-being. And in order to do that, we have to fortify every level.
Thank you. And Stephen, if I can ask you, I read this really interesting article in The Oregonian that was published back in 2016, where it really shed light on the narrative that while Portland and Oregon in general is extremely white, with I believe 86% of Oregon white as far as the 2019 census, there are still obviously Black people in Oregon. And in that article, it stated that back in, I think it was talking about 2016, that there were at least 5,000 Black-owned businesses in Portland. Can you talk about, from your economic background, why it's so important to support Black-owned businesses, especially right now?
Yeah, so when you go and you look at, from a financial standpoint, what's the foundation of you know, a community's ability to build and sustain wealth? It's around owning things and being owners of businesses in particular. And so, you know, a lot of the narratives that we hear about when it comes to Black businesses, generally people say things like, and they talk about service businesses. And, you know, back in 2016, with the census data coming out on the American Community Survey, it talked about there being more than 5,000 black businesses in the state of Oregon, and more than 4,000 of those residing in the Portland metropolitan area. And that just didn't match the stories and the headlines that you read about generally. And so, mm-hmm. you know, kudos to Casey Parks, the Oregonian, for coming out and speaking to a different narrative. And the narrative that we don't often hear about was that black businesses, you know, exist all over the region. We've got more black-owned businesses in Northeast Portland now than we've ever had in history. We've got more black-owned businesses in the city of Portland than we've ever had in the city's history. Unfortunately, those businesses do the most with the least amount of resources. And imagine if there was a world where traditional lenders in the public sector and others made a supreme focus on supporting and empowering these founders to not only start but also thrive and grow over time. And so, you know, I think in this moment right now, the quickest way for folks to heal and kind of reconcile coming out of COVID is to support black businesses. Each day in Portland, we spend about $4 million, Portlanders do, on food. Imagine what a difference it makes if we shift, you know, a small portion of that to black-owned businesses, and how that money would circulate not only in the business community, but also trickle down into families and social organizations. You know, that has a direct impact on the money that churches receive as well. So it's huge.
And go ahead. With that message of hope, can you speak to why this is such a hopeful opportunity for Black Oregonians, and what it will allow for the future?
I think Representative Spence has said several times that it responds in a way that has been identified as necessary and appropriate to great harm. It redresses some of that, but it's responding to this moment of the pandemic, adding further harm to all of the ongoing historical and current harm that we're familiar with for African Americans, that the data just illustrates. That's exciting to me. Never have I heard or imagined, as hard as all of us have worked, that a pandemic would create this opportunity for correct resourcing based upon a very carefully constructed proposal for remedy. And so this is a big moment to me, and I hope that she would speak more to it.
Yeah, thank you so much, Sharon. I think, you know, what this fund really represents and presents is an opportunity for the state to demonstrate its commitment to racial equity. And, you know, for people in the black community, we have really deeply traumatic experiences when we have confronted the state about our needs. When we have said that this is what we need and this is how you can redress harm, the response has been less than favorable. And it's because we don't have robust representation of communities of color across all levels of government. And so truly what this fund did was we advocated for ourselves, right? Our community came together to commit to this self-advocacy because our needs are not embedded in the structures that exist. And so we have to constantly inject ourselves into decision-making processes. And, you know, it's not as though the data, like Sharon is saying, the data isn't clear, right? Our lived reality has been painted, right? They know what the landscape is. And it's painful that we have to continue to do this work on our own. That it's not that there was a COVID-19 response that utilized targeted universalism and utilized, you know, structures that said we have to craft an equitable response to this pandemic or else our communities will be left behind. And so what this represents, again, is remedial action for the state to really create this remedy and create a format upon which they can build going forward, right? This is not a full stop. This is a beginning. This is an example of what can and needs to be done over and over again for not just the black community, but BIPOC communities in general, so that we can get what has been long overdue.
This is Claire Rosciato with KBOO Evening News.